the overall message of 2 Corinthians is Paul defends himself for the Corinthians' sake. And he really started doing that from the very beginning of the book and kept it up pretty consistently. Chapters 8 and 9 are an exception where he talks about the giving. So let's just outline again 2 Corinthians as a reminder, because we're going into the third and final section of the book this morning. In the first section, chapters 1 through 7, Paul defends his conduct, and he also defends his new covenant ministry itself. And then in chapters 8 and 9, he talks about the collection for the Jerusalem saints. And then what we're entering into this morning, and then we'll have one more class on 2 Corinthians before we wrap it up, is Paul defends his apostleship. And we're going to see a shift in the tone. How would you describe Paul's tone in chapters 1 through 7 as he defends his conduct and defends his ministry? How might you define his tone and his manner of speaking?
I'm just going to quote what I saw in the book, not the Bible, sarcasm.
That's definitely in this last section, yes. The sarcasm is going to be in this last section. And so that does stand in stark contrast to what we saw in the first section. So first section was really conciliatory and tactful and pretty gentle. And then now as he goes into this last section, it's just like he flips a switch. And there is biting sarcasm. And there's some very strong rebuke and threat of punishment. Really strong language. And perhaps the reason for that is it seems that the majority of the congregation had responded well to Paul's letter, had turned from their sinful actions. Remember in chapter 2 when he talks about that the majority had responded to his instructions about withdrawing from that individual who needed to be withdrawn from. So it was not the whole congregation, but a smaller portion of the congregation that were really struggling to honor Paul and to regard him as an apostle, that were really being influenced by these false apostles. And so I think what's happening is, at the beginning of the book, he's speaking to kind of the larger audience, but then here at the end, he's narrowing his focus to really talk about those who were doubting his apostleship. That's why he's defending his apostleship. Those who are influenced by these false apostles. And that's why his language shifts so dramatically. So we're going to be looking this morning at chapters 10 and 11, which is about boldness and is about boasting. And Paul's going to take a dramatically different approach to those two things than the Corinthians do and than what they expect. And so as we start here in chapter 10, let's start out reading the first couple of verses. Paul says, "Now I, Paul, myself, urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I who am meek when face to face with you, but bold toward you when absent, I ask that when I am present, I need not be bold with the confidence with which I propose to be courageous against some who regard us as if we walked according to the flesh." Paul is saying, I humbly urge you not to make me boldly act against you, right? You know, we who are parents understand that sort of thing. We don't want to be hard on our kids. We don't want to have to be harsh with them. We don't want to have to punish them. We'd rather be nice all the time. So haven't you said that sort of thing? Don't make me have to punish you. I don't want to do that. We can all understand that Paul is expressing that kind of an idea. In other words, I can if I have to, but I'd really rather not. Let's continue reading in 3 through 6. He says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, And we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. Paul is going on the offense here. He is perceiving what they're doing as spiritual warfare. And Paul often uses metaphors of warfare, like in Ephesians 6, about put on the full armor of God. He's looking at this as spiritual warfare. These false apostles and their influence, that is waging a spiritual war that Paul is ready to go on the offensive and attack. He pointedly describes several aspects of siege warfare. And he's the one going on the attack against that city. And he is positioning himself here as Christ's military leader. This is very aggressive, strong kind of language. And he's saying, look, the things that you guys regard, those fleshly items about which you boast and that you think are important, those are not the kinds of things that I'm warring against you with. It's not going to be a matter of oratory skills against oratory skills. It's going to be the power of God to crush down your high and lofty and arrogant claims and these walls that you have built up in your mind against accepting the truth of the gospel. The power of God can just rip and tear those like a structure that a siege ramper that is built against, and that wall is just absolutely tore down with battering rams and other machines of siege destruction. That's the kind of really aggressive, strong, and powerful language that Paul is using here. Question for us here, what are these weapons he's talking about? There's many. What are some of these spiritual weapons of warfare that Paul is ready to use and utilize? What does God have at his disposal for us to use in our warfare? Prayer? Another one?
Scriptures.
I mean, the gospel itself is a weapon. Absolutely. Will? Truth? Very good.
Truth of the gospel.
Your heart.
Your heart.
A pure, a good and honest heart.
How about
humility and gentleness and meekness? Could that even be a weapon? How about treating kindness to your enemies? That could be a weapon. So there are all sorts of weapons, spiritual weapons that we have at our disposal. And these are not the kind of weapons they think. You know, Paul's not saying, I'm going to fight fire with fire. I've heard somebody say that of a preacher that I love very much. And he was lovingly trying to help this lady spiritually turn and do some right things. And she just became nasty. And she said, well, I fight fire with fire, as if that's something I'm proud of. Paul's not saying that. He's going to fight their fire with something totally different that they're not prepared for. All right, any other thoughts on that before we kind of move on? So in verses 7 through 11, Paul talks about his weak appearance, but his very real authority. And I don't mean appearance in the way that he looked necessarily, but just who he wasn't what they were expecting. And so first in verses 7 and 8, Paul says there, we belong, talking about himself and the others who were preaching with him, we belong to Christ like you think and trust that you do. If you think you belong to Christ, well, we do. And that was kind of what the false apostles were apparently saying is, hey, look, listen, Corinthians, we belong to Christ. This Paul guy, he doesn't really belong to Christ. And Paul is saying, actually, I do. And he's going to say that again later. And so he says, and we will not be put to shame about boasting about our God-given authority. In other words, we're not going to be made to close our mouths and to shut up. They're trying to shut Paul up. Paul's saying, we're not going to do that. I'm going to keep boasting about this authority God has given us to build you up. And I will not stop doing that. And then in verses 9 through 11, I want to read this. Paul says, "For I do not wish as if I would terrify you by my letters. For they say, his letters are weighty and strong, but his personal presence is unimpressive and his speech contemptible. Let such a person consider this," Paul says, "that what we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we are also indeed when present." So this was kind of a, you know, it was gossip. It was a lie about Paul that, oh, he acts all big and tough in his letters, but when he comes here in person, he's not going to, he's a pushover. Have you ever experienced where you maybe try to show humility and preference for others, and people perceive you as just a doormat, as a pushover? In the world, humility can be perceived as what? Weakness. And it's just so ironic that Paul goes out of his way to show preference to them and to express meekness and love, and they are perceiving that as a bad thing. And oh boy, the false teachers, they're exploiting that. His letters are weighty and strong. His personal presence is unimpressive. What do you think they meant by that? His personal presence is unimpressive. Ma'am?
They didn't care what he looked like.
Okay. So now, I think that there is probably some truth to that, whether this passage is talking about that or not. We get the idea from maybe some other passages as well that Paul perhaps wasn't all that much to look at. Remember when he and Barnabas in Lystra were being worshipped? And remember what they called Barnabas? What did they call Barnabas? Zeus. And Paul was the chief speaker. Paul was Hermes. And some have suggested that they chose Barnabas to be called Zeus because he looked more of the part. There's even an apocryphal writing about Paul. Some say the oral tradition goes back to the first century. I don't know, that he had a crooked nose and bowed legs and a unibrow, you know. So if that's true, I don't know. But his personal presence here seems to be a little bit more, however, than just his appearance. It seems to be just his demeanor and his manner was not what they would expect of a great leader, right? They wanted somebody that would come in and just kind of rule with an iron fist. And we're going to talk about that. Paul says you love it when people treat you like that. All right, very good. So let's see. I wanted to mention one other thing. They said his speech is contemptible. Do you think Paul was a poor speaker? Now, we've read his sermons. He was very eloquent in the sense of his content. But maybe what was perhaps contemptible about his speech? Carol?
Peter says in another passage that sometimes some things that he said were hard to understand.
Okay, some things hard in 2 Peter 3.
Really, clear.
Okay.
Some
things were hard to understand, and that were, you know, those were things about the end times and the second coming of Christ. And yes, there were some difficult things to understand. I think it might be more of the idea that maybe he had really great content. Of course he did, he was an apostle, but his delivery and his voice wasn't what they would expect. Have you ever heard a speaker like that? And then they get up there. I can remember going to the lectures at Florida College, and this guy got up and he just literally read his lecture that I had in the book right before. He read it word for word, and he just looked down the whole time, and his voice was really annoying. And the content was great, but I could not focus on anything the man was saying. It might have been sort of that thing to them. He just doesn't sound like a great speaker. I mean, look how superficial they were. And that's superficial of us. If we're focused more on the delivery that a preacher might give than on the actual content of his message, let's make sure that we're focusing on what's substantive and truly valuable in God's eyes.
Being bilingual, that could very well be the part. He's spoken Hebrew all his life.
Okay.
He's speaking Greek.
Okay.
His delivery, his use of words.
Okay. That could be the fact that he's bilingual. All right, well, let's move on. In verses 12 through 18, Paul talks about here the only legitimate kind of boasting that there is. And in verses 12 and 13, he says, we do not compare ourselves to those self-promoters among you, and we will not boast beyond our measure. And so, you know, a little lesson here in passing for us is let's make sure we're not comparing ourselves to other Christians as if that's the standard, right? Well, I'm better than that guy or that Christian over there because of this or that thing that I do or this or that talent that I have in the kingdom. I mean, that seems ridiculous, but people do get caught up in that. They do get caught up in that. And the Corinthians, some of them were caught up in that, particularly these false teachers. And Paul in 14 through 16 is going to define what this boasting beyond measure really means. He is saying we do not boast in other men's labors. Now, what does he mean when he says we're not boasting in other men's labors? What does he mean by that?
Other preachers like Apollos.
Yeah.
Or
right. Paul took, I don't want to say he took pride in, it was his mission and call by the Lord to go and bring the gospel to places that had never been brought. Paul did not want to build on the foundation of other people. He talks about that in another place. These false apostles, what were they doing when they came into town? They were building on Paul's foundation, weren't they? And then they were claiming this is their work, right? And so Paul's saying, we're not going to boast in other men's labors like that. We are the ones who first brought the gospel to you. And we hope to continue doing that in other areas beyond you. And then in 17 and 18, I have to read this. This is so powerful. He says, but he who boasts is to boast in the Lord. That's a quote from Jeremiah 9:24, beautiful passage. He says, for it is not he who commends himself that is approved, but he whom the Lord commends. And so he's saying, I want you to, first of all, if you're going to boast, only boast in the Lord. What a great reminder for us, right? I mean, I've heard preachers get up and almost boast about themselves. Maybe I've found myself doing that before. That's shameful. As if I'm some great thing or some other preacher is some great thing. We talk about all the things I've done and the converts that I've been able to make. We need to all be careful. Especially when it comes to like spiritual things. We don't boast in ourselves, but our boast should always and only be in the Lord. That's not what the false apostles were doing. They were boasting in themselves and how good they were and happy to talk about all their accomplishments. I think we just have to be really, really, really careful about that. And Paul says, you need to realize that only those who are commended by the Lord are the ones who are approved. In other words, these guys who are commending themselves don't recognize them. The very fact that they're commending themselves shows that they are not commended by the Lord. Any thoughts, comments, questions from chapter 10? Yes, ma'am?
What comes to my mind when he's talking about boasting is where it says, if you do anything for recognition, from others, you've already received your reward. And that kind of is reminding me of that, with the people that are boasting about their selves.
Yes.
It's kind of my paraphrase of it.
Well, there's a proverb that says, don't boast yourself, but let others boast about you. If anybody's going to be boasting about you, don't let it be you. let it be someone else. Yeah. David?
In verse 5 there, he says, take every thought captive. Does that mean that we can't, like, think about how we're going to punish somebody that has offended us?
The problem that these Corinthians had was in their mindset, right? He's not dealing here with like sins of the flesh. He's dealing here with a mentality that, that was discrediting Paul. And therefore, if they were discrediting Paul, what else were they discrediting? Christ? The message that Paul was delivering, which happened to be the gospel of Jesus Christ? And if they were not, if they were not bringing their thoughts captive under Christ, then there's no way that they would submit themselves to the gospel, right? So I think he's talking about their, he's here in the context. Now, I think the principle could apply far more than that. But you asked the question, I'll be honest with y'all. I was expecting Brian to go into this part of the text more. So I was going to be like, I'm not going to step on this. And I asked Brian this morning, he said, oh, you can talk about that all you want. So I was in my office back there, like frantically reading commentary. I'm like, help me understand this text. So I am still forming some of my thoughts on it. Brian, you may have some things to add, or anybody else on this. I didn't mess anything up there, did I, Brian?
No, you didn't. Okay. I mean, I think there's validity to what David's saying, too, about the principle of if I have some thought in my head, if it's sinful or if it's untruthful or illogical, I need to bring that into obedience to Christ.
Yes, yes.
Christ is sinless. He is truth. He is logic. So, you know, all of that needs to be brought into subjection to Christ.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm glad you kind of brought that back, because I kind of rambled. But certainly, all sin begins like in our mind, right? And if we want to avoid sin, we've got to bring our thoughts captive, first and foremost. Very important. Yeah, good question. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Doesn't it say somewhere if you're going to boast in your infirmities?
Well, certainly Paul is going to do that later in this very book. And we talked about his infirmities, but you're bringing up a passage I can't place exactly, but boasting in one's infirmities?
11:30.
Okay, yeah. I read that today, but I have a different version. It doesn't say infirmities. It says weakness. But yeah, 11:30, if I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. So there's the verse. Very good. Thank you, Brian. Okay, so to sum up chapter 10, here's what Paul basically says. Please don't make us come down hard on you. Don't doubt that I will be bold in person if need be. We will not stop boasting about our authority in the Lord, though we will not boast like those who commend themselves. Realize they are not approved by God. So pretty simple message. Let's go on in now to chapter 11. Paul is going to kind of play the part of a fool, in a sense. He's going to play their game of foolishness here. And so he starts out in verses 1 and 2 telling them, why don't you bear with me in some foolishness, in some boasting in the flesh, which I do only because I deeply desire your salvation. He says, I'm jealous for you with a godly jealousy. And he uses the language there of a father who's giving his daughter away to a man to be betrothed. He says, I betrothed you to one husband, and that is Christ, that I may present you as a pure virgin. So that shows his love and his care as a father has for his daughter, so Paul had for the Corinthians. He desperately wants them to be saved, but he has a genuine concern. And let's read 3 and 4 where he says, but I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. For if one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit, which you have not received, or a different gospel, which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. He's saying, I'm afraid that you're going to be deceived, that you're going to believe a lie like Eve did, that you're going to be deceived by these false apostles who are going to deceive you just like Satan did. And in a moment, he's going to call these individuals servants of Satan himself. It's interesting that he says there in verse 4, you know, if somebody preaches a different Jesus to you, you'll gladly bear that. What would maybe a different Jesus be? Preaching a different Jesus. Now, there's only one Jesus. How could somebody preach a different Jesus? What would that mean?
Well,
okay. And there's a very real sense it would not mean anything. Good.
There's a lot of still, especially in, I guess this isn't super applicable for the Corinthians, but especially in Jewish nations, there would be this sense that there's still going to be a physical king that would come from the promise to David. And like that.
Yeah.
That would be a false Jesus.
That would be a false Jesus, this physical king. Exactly. Very good. What about today? Or Terry, go ahead.
One that accepts everyone.
Right? A Jesus who would never condemn anyone. Is that Jesus preached today in many circles? Yes, absolutely. Charles?
I would say more of a Western high version of Jesus,
like blue-eyed, blonde-haired Jesus. Right. Yeah, this is definitely a different Jesus than the Jewish Jesus, and more to fit our mold, perhaps. Brian?
A Jesus that's not necessary, just a prophet. Or just a good man.
He's just a good man.
I don't need a sacrifice.
Yeah, he's just a prophet, like the Muslims will teach and others. So yeah, that's definitely a different Jesus. Hey, he lived and he was good and from God, but not the Savior. That's a different Jesus for sure. I'm not sure exactly what these false apostles were teaching, but their gospel was based on what? Remember? What we studied back in chapter 3? It was based on the Old Testament. And so I'm not sure what they were saying about Jesus, but they were preaching a different Jesus. Now, when Paul mentions a different gospel than we have preached to you and that you have received, that sounds very similar to what passage? Anybody remember? In Galatians 1, remember that passage in verses 8 and 9 where Paul says, even if an angel were to preach a different gospel to you than what we have preached to you, what does he say next? Let him be accursed. Let him be anathema, right? And so there's only one gospel, but there can be different gospels preached. What are some examples of different gospels that could be preached? Okay. If you change the method by which we become saved to say that it's no longer water baptism combined with belief and repentance, or it's something where you're saved and you're always saved, then is that the same gospel anymore? It's not the same gospel at all. It's a completely different gospel. Dozens of gospels, hundreds of gospels are being preached out there. And they all look kind of similar on the surface. Any other thoughts on those various gospels? Brian?
Health and wealth.
Say it again?
Health and wealth.
The health and wealth gospel. Yeah, that is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. Good. All right, now verses 5 through 15, Paul talks more about these false apostles pointedly. He says in verses 5 and 6, "For I consider myself not in the least inferior to the most eminent apostles. But even if I am unskilled in speech, yet I am not so in knowledge. In fact, in every way we have made this evident to you in all things." Now, when he says he's not inferior to the most eminent apostles, does anybody have a different translation there than most eminent apostles? Or is that what literally every single person in here has?
I do not think I would be at least inferior to those super apostles.
It's literally the Greek word huper, super. It's where we get the word hyper. So I guess literally he's saying the hyper apostles. And so one, possible way to look at this is that he's simply describing like the actual apostles, like Peter, the most eminent of the apostles, and saying I'm not inferior to them. I think it's in Romans 15 that Paul said he labored even harder than the other apostles. But it seems more likely that he's talking about these false apostles, and he's calling them super apostles, sarcastically. That seems to fit the context more. And so I think that's what he's referring to. They were positioning themselves as not just an apostle. They were hyper-apostles. They were super apostles. And Paul admits in verse 6 that he may be unskilled in speech in a certain way. He says, even if I am unskilled in speech, I am not so in knowledge. And I just, as a side point, want to give a little note of encouragement here to some who may think, you know, you're limited. Like, you can't do certain things that others can do because you don't have this or that talent. Take, for example, you think you're just not good at talking to people. I'm just not good at talking to people, so, a man might tell himself, I could never get up here and do a Wednesday night invitation. I'm not good at talking in front of people. I'm not gifted in speech. I don't know how to go talk to my neighbor. Well, apparently, Paul was not super gifted in speech itself. But he was very gifted in knowledge. But he didn't let the lack of that ability of speech hold him back. So all I'm saying is, don't make excuses, and I'm talking to myself. Don't make excuses about, you know, your lack of talent in this or that area. I get very nervous around people, and I always have. And it takes me a long time to kind of get used to people and warmed up to people, and I put on a facade that's not the case. But I'm scared to death of new people, and sometimes scared to death of people I know. And I can use that as an excuse sometimes. Well, I'm just, you know, some people are just better. Like Terry Tokash, man, that guy could talk to a brick wall, and it would be a really interesting conversation, you know. And like, I cannot do that. And so let people like him go and do more of the like, just cold contact evangelism, and not me, I can't do that. That's just an excuse. And Paul wasn't going to limit himself that way. All right, any thoughts on any of that? So let's continue. And verses 7 and 8, I'll read those as well. He says, "Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted, because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? I robbed other churches by taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone. For when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything I kept myself from being a burden to you, and will continue to do so." So they were criticizing Paul of, you know what, this guy's message is not really worth much, obviously, because why? It's free. How much value could it really have if this guy won't even accept money for what he's doing? Now, you see, again, where they took something that Paul was doing out of humility and love and concern for them and preference for them, and they were turning that around as a bad thing. You know, sometimes when we have it out for somebody, we'll find any little thing we can to level against them. And sometimes it'll be even something good, and we can find a way to turn it evil. And that was the attitude of heart that these people had. And Paul said, Did I sin by not accepting payment for your benefit? No, Paul said, I robbed other churches so that I could serve you, and I did that for your good so as not to be a burden on you. Now, Paul is going to give a really good reason why he did not accept money from the church at Corinth in a couple of minutes. All right, now in verses 10 through 12, Paul says, "I will continue to preach to you for free so that I may cut off opportunity from the boasters." And there's that reason. So look at verse 12. He said, "But what I am doing, I will continue to do so that I may cut off opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the matter about which they are boasting." They want to be regarded as apostles, and I want to cut off opportunity from them. I want to expose them for what they really are. I want to show what their true colors are and what their true motivations are. And he did that by not accepting money to preach. how would that expose them?
Well, I mean, it would just create a situation where if you were truly anointed by God, would you do it for free?
Right, exactly.
Would you be called and do it for free if this is your true motive for it?
It is to save souls, yes. Yes. Would they have done it for free, these false apostles? This was their profession. They were traveling, like traveling sophists, and coming into town and getting paid and, you know, boasting about themselves and giving their credentials and their letters of recommendation and all of that. It was a job. And they were doing it for money. That was their ultimate motive. You know, Paul said back in chapter 2 that they were peddling the word of God. And so Paul is going to he's not going to receive money for one reason, so that he may show so he can pull the rug out from under them, basically. Do you think there could be situations today where it would be wise for a preacher at a certain place, a certain congregation that had certain attitudes, to just say, you know what, I think it'd be best if I just don't accept money from this congregation? Can you think of a situation where that might be beneficial or useful even today? Okay, so that would be a very practical thing, right? A smaller congregation that couldn't afford a preacher.
How would this be a congregation that lacks maturity?
A congregation that lacks maturity? Yeah, maybe. Or what if you had people there that had a similar attitude to the Corinthians here, that's kind of like, how can I really trust anything if there's money behind it? Like, how can I really trust this message or this book or whatever if I know that the author is making like money on this thing? Aren't they really motivated by money? I've seen brethren have that sort of skepticism. You could be in a situation like that, and that very brother could be looking at the preacher and saying, this guy, how can I really trust him? Maybe he's just doing it for the money. Maybe that preacher could say, you know what, I'll do this without payment. Would that be extreme? I don't know of any preacher that would probably be willing to just outright do that. But Paul was willing to do that.
Opposite, where they come to him and they're giving, well, listen, we're paying you all this money. Yeah. You need to give us the message we want to hear.
Yeah.
Well, how about I don't take money, so I'm giving the truth.
Yes, and there was a patronage society. And, you know, there was this whole social dynamic that was kind of bizarre. There was all these sort of rules. And, you know, if you paid someone to, you know, promote your name or something like that, that other person was expected to either pay you back or to publicly praise you to somehow return what you did for them. And so part of what Paul is probably doing is not wanting to get caught up in, you know, that exchange. Like, no, I'm going to preach what needs to be preached. I'm not going to at all be put in slavery under you for the money that you're paying me. And no preacher ever needs to have the attitude, I'm going to preach what they want me to preach because they're paying me to say it. I always need to be willing to just preach the truth. And let's go on to 13 through 15. In these verses, Paul says that these false apostles disguise themselves as apostles of Christ, like the devil, their master, who disguises himself as an angel of God. In other words, he's saying they're just imposters. And it's unclear what he's referencing here when he says Satan disguises himself as an angel. Some say that he's referencing the book of Job, where, you know, Satan came and presented himself with the sons of God, came before God, like presenting himself almost like as an angel. Some say it's where Jacob wrestled the angel, that really he was wrestling Satan. And Satan was appearing as an angel. I mean, that's all speculation. But the point is, Satan loves to appear as an angel. And he does appear as an angel of light in a lot of religious circles. And people are drawn and they are deceived by that. All right, any other thoughts from that section before we move forward? All right, 16 through 21, Paul says, let me boast a little. He says, starting in verse 16, you know, allow me to boast in foolishness. Let me boast according to the flesh, as many people do. In other words, I'm going to speak as if insane. He's reluctant to do this. He doesn't really want to speak this way. This is not the way Christ would have him do. But he's going to show, what if I play this game that they're playing? What would that look like? And he's going to do that, but in a different way than they're expecting. In verses 19 and 20, make sure I'm in the right place. I want to read this. He says, "For you being so wise, tolerate the fools gladly. For you tolerate it if anyone enslaves you, anyone devours you, anyone takes advantage of you, anyone exalts himself, anyone hits you in the face." He's going, "I'm going to talk to you as foolish because you seem to like foolishness. You seem to like the way fools would treat you. So I'm going to talk to you as a fool." And so see that sarcasm he's using there. Their idea of a strong leader is someone who comes in and just lords it over them, smacks them around a little bit, puts them in their place. You know, do people today sometimes have that idea toward, you know, leadership and power? That what a true leader is somebody that comes in and just rules with his iron fist, right? And Paul wasn't doing that. And so I kind of mentioned that earlier. And so they were more willing to tolerate the mistreatment than they were to tolerate the humility of Paul. Stop me if anybody has any comments that you want to throw in along the way.
I want to throw out real quick.
Go ahead, Charles.
Just funny just how that trend is people wanting that type of leadership is found numerous times throughout the Bible and even to, you know, into modern times. Like I know there was a particular time they were with King Nebuchadnezzar, I think that was the king that that is, you know, the children of the Israelites, they wanted a king to rule over them, so God allowed a king to step in a place, but it's like that mentality of like I need somebody to come in and whip me into shape basically instead of like being self-accountable and being able to
move on within. Yeah, it's almost like, you know, at the end of the period of the Judges when the people wanted a king and God told them what the king was going to be like and how hard it was going to be on everybody. Things are going to be a whole lot, you know, just a lot more difficult on you and your children than they are right now. And they're like, well, we want a king anyway. That's what they wanted. They wanted somebody to come in and rule and be strong and be hard on them. It was like they wanted that. And that's kind of how the Corinthians were here. And then in verse 21, Paul says, we are weak by comparison. We're not as strong as these super apostles. But then Paul says, in reality, I'm just as bold as they are. And that's where Paul starts his list of credentials that I talked about, and I did that on purpose so I would, because I knew I would run out of time, where he goes through all of his credentials of his suffering and then his internal struggles that he has caring for all the churches to show that he is imitating his Savior in all of these struggles that he's undergoing, a totally different set of credentials than they were expecting. And he ends, and I'll read this as we wrap up in verses 30 and 31. He says, if I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, He who is blessed forever, knows that I'm not lying. Everything I told you was true. They were finding that hard to believe, probably. And that's about all the time that I have. Sorry, I felt a little bit unprepared this morning, but thank you all for your kind attention. Please read through the end of the book and the corresponding pages in the Waldron book for Wednesday.